Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Hey there, everyone, and happy Monday. This is Jules Russell, your host for tonight's Lunatic Mondays. Tonight, our guest is Laura Gonzalez. Laura has been researching and teaching about Day of the Dead for the last 34 years and has lived this tradition as her core life passion from birth. Hi, Laura.
How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm feeling weird because my show has been kidnapped.
Well, yeah, I'm good at that.
I'd like to thank you, Juliana, Jules. For those who live under a rock and don't know who Jules is, she is my dear friend, collaborator here on Lunatic Mondays tonight, of course, and one of our ministers in training for the Ministers in Training program with Circle Sanctuary. And I usually do this show, and I'm usually the host. However, I cannot, for the life of me, do a show on my own, just talking, as much as I can talk for days. So I asked Juliana to please help me out, and she's here doing so. So thank you so much, Juliana, or Jules, as we love you. And so, yep, thank you. And so what you got for us today, honey?
Day of the Dead. We're going to talk about Day of the Dead, what it is, what it isn't, all the stuff, because you know the stuff.
I do. So yes, I do.
You do.
Go ahead.
So how old is Celebration of the Day of the Dead?
You know, the actual celebration as we know it in Mexico City, I'm from Mexico City, I grew up there, and it is believed that the people that actually live in Mexico City have been having this tradition for at least 3,000 years. Between 3,000 to 3,500 years. Now, you have to remember that the native peoples of the land have been there since the world is world. And we have other tribes or other peoples or other... I'm going to have to mute you because I can hear a whole lot of movement over there. So I'm going to mute you until I'm done with my answer. That's cool. Anyway, those people have been living in that side of the country, of the continent, for over 3,500 years. There's been different. The Mexica Tenochca people, known as Aztecs, it is believed that they have been there for about 3,000 years. And the celebration, the Day of the Dead, the actual Day of the Dead, is a celebration of the month.
Hey there, Laura, you still with us? We're getting silence on your end, honey. Okay, apparently Laura is having technical difficulties. I'm not sure if she's lost internet connection or telephone connectivity or what. So give us just a moment here and we'll get everything back going again.
And we're back here on Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos. Juliana, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you clear and clear as day. You know, this is so bizarre. Every time I'm trying to talk about this show, every time I try to talk about this class or worship to the masses, like when I want to talk to a lot of people, something happens.
Right.
Something happened. I don't know. It's so weird. Anyway, after you asked me how old the tradition was, you couldn't hear anything, right?
We heard, at least I heard for a few minutes, and then it just went silent.
Wow, that is bizarre. So, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take it from the top, and let me explain. The people in Mexico City, the Aztecs, as they are known, they are the Mexica Tenochca people. And it's believed that the tradition is about 3,500 years old. Of course, there was people living in the North America, South America, Central America, even before then. But this tradition particularly comes from like 3,500 years. And it comes from the months on the year, on the Aztec calendar, actually. So the months are called Tlazochimaco and Xocowetzin. And the rough translation of that will be the month of the flower and the month of the fruit. And our people, they were very metaphorical. They speak on metaphors, and they will explain everything with metaphors. So when they talk about the flower and the fruit, what they will be talking about is about a person growing and flowering and reaching their full potential and being who they were supposed to be, blossoming, if you will. And then about the fruit, and the concept was, as a fruit, what is your seed? What is your legacy? What are you leaving to the world when you leave? What is that that you left behind for the others that I will that will continue in this world? And the idea is that you leave wherever you go, you leave the place better than you find it. So it's not only about your descendants of blood or how you blossom by reproducing and living offspring in this world, but it was more about your legacy as a person. And so this process of dying and living and regenerating is explained with something that is called Mictlán. And of course, when the colonizers came, you know, they see all these temples and all these figures with the skulls and the guts coming out of the bodies and skeletons, and they couldn't understand one thing. They thought there were demons, and they thought there were some evil stuff. And the truth is, so here's the biggest part of the metaphor. Mictlán is not a place, it is a state of being. And it roughly translates as dreaming or deep sleep dreaming, what we now know as REM, the rapid eye movement moments. And so it's a state of being. And then Mictlantecuhtli and Mictlacahuatl, which are the Lord and the Lady of the underworld, are actually physical, biological processes that are happening in our body. And Mictlacahuatl, which is the internal aspect of it, is the actual cleansing of our organs and the regeneration of our cells. What science has actually proven now that happens when we are on that deep sleep. So the metaphor is we go to Mictlán and we wake up, and then we go to Mictlán and we wake up, and then we go to Mictlán and eventually we will not wake up and we will stay doing Mictlán. You know, we will be on the eternal rest place. And the fact that they are depicted with skulls, the skull means rest, regenerate. You know, and so it is a universal concept. And of course, we are skulls under the skin. All of us are. But our people represent it. So the flower blossoming, the seed, what you leave behind, the skull was about, you know, regenerating and coming back to live more into the world. And if you look at the photo of this huge statue of Mictlantecuhtli that is in Mexico City, the heart is coming out of his ribs, but it looks like a flower that is blossoming. And so the heart is talking about rejoicing in life. And it's all these metaphors that, of course, the colonizers couldn't understand because their mind was set up in either things being sacred or evil. And because it was not two sticks put together as a cross that was supposed to be holy, then everything else was evil. But let's forget about colonizers. So where the party comes from? Where is the tradition coming from? Well, when you celebrate the months of Tlazochimaco and Sokowetzin, which was 2 months of 20 days each, what people were celebrating was the ancestors and those who passed away, those who went to Mictlan very young, they were celebrated at the time, the month of the flower. Why? Because they are the ones that didn't leave a seed. You see where the metaphor is going? The young people, 14 and younger, they're children. So they don't have a seed to leave behind yet because they haven't blossomed fully. And then on the next month, the month of the ripe fruit and the harvesting, that was the celebration of the people who passed away after they blossomed. Those are the ones that left behind their seed and, you know, their legacy. So the parts of the ancestors and how they celebrated is they celebrated this 2 months, and they mainly have this beautiful, colorful flowers that are very, very similar to the marigold. They're not necessarily like the American, North American marigold, but they're very similar. Mm-hmm. And what you used to see on the offerings back then, it was on the floor, because it was all about dancing to honor the ancestors. And you'll have the flowers, you'll have the fruits, and you'll have the two statues of this god and goddess, or this processes of the body that the Americans, the colonizers, believed that they were evil, but they were actually these depictions of skull, showing skull people that are the representative of the eternal rest. And so you'll have those statues, flowers and the fruit, and that was the very first celebrations that, you know, happened, and that was obviously thousands of years ago.
Wow, that's really cool. I love the metaphors that are used in that. That blows my mind. So
yeah.
You talked about the ancient people. How are the celebrations today similar to what was done back then, or have they changed as society's changed?
Well, you know, I don't think it changes a lot. Of course, now we're talking post-colonization, right? So I have to say my joke. Mexico is the most pagan country in the world. Don't tell the Mexicans. They think they're Catholic. And you and I know, especially you, because you're an academic and you study a lot of things, actually reading books. I just collect them. You actually read them. you know that the Catholicism that was brought to what is now Mexico in the 1500s was a Catholic religion that was already infused with a lot of pagan traditions. So the way I say it, to kind of like explain it easily with a metaphor, because that's how we talk on our people, is the Catholicism that we have in Mexico has pagan DNA. And so the colonizers brought these ideas of the gods and the goddesses, but they also brought a lot of elements, and I'm speaking literally, elements and things mm-hmm. that will represent the elements into the what is now called ofrendas, the offerings. And these are huge okay. offerings that people set up on their houses, or they will set them up at the graveyard. And the ofrendas nowadays, they still have the quintessential flower, because obviously the flower is never not going to be part of the celebration, the fruit,
right?
But also the sugar skulls. Now, here, take this with a grain of salt, because I wasn't there, unfortunately, so I'm not sure if it was or not true. But they say, some historians say that our people actually will clean the remains of the dearly departed, and they will actually set up the skulls of their loved ones. Some other historians say that's not true, that they were made of clay, that they were made of stone, and that it was just a statue of Mictlantecuhtli or a statue of Mictlantecuhtli. Whether it was the skull or just a statue, when the colonizers came, they're like, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore. We have this nifty way of making candy with sugar. So why don't you all make your skulls with sugar? And that's where the sugar skull comes from. But it is still the sugar skull, a sacred representation of Mictlantecuhtli and Mictlantecuhtli, whom are the embodied processes of what our bodies do, which is regenerate themselves and therefore keep living or not, which is part of a bigger metaphor that explains the process of life, birth, growth, death, regeneration, and mm-hmm. life again. So the skulls are very sacred and they're very valuable. And even in Mexico, there are Mexican people who don't know that the skulls are actually tying us up to concepts of what the processes of the biology of our bodies, are doing when we go to sleep. But anyway, going back to this century, the Catholic mm-hmm. influences of the colonizers, they were infused with paganism. So get a hold of this. They will have to have water to purify, to give drinks to the dearly departed, to have the dead souls come and wash themselves. They will have fire, these huge pillar candles, to purify and to represent the spark of life. They will have this beautiful cut paper flags to celebrate, and the flags will move with the air, and they will represent joy, and they will also move because, you know, the souls are coming. And then you'll have the food made with grain and all this delicious traditional food that is made with stuff that comes from the ground that will represent the element of earth. So all four elements that are quintessentially tied up with magic and paganism are present at the offering, because that was the influence from the colonizers. And of course, you have photographs, you have iconography of their religious beliefs, and you have the three levels on the altars, and the three-level altar will represent the heavens, the earth, and the underworld. And there are some others that are much more elaborated. And I will not go into that many detail because, you know, this is a worship that needs like 3 hours to explain it all. But
I sat in on your workshop. They're, yeah.
You've been there for the whole 3 hours. I know. We break it out into years, you know. First we did the one, then we did the other. Anyway, if you weren't there, you don't know what I'm talking about. But the celebrations and what is important, you know, in Mexico, whether you're atheist, Catholic, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, whatever, we have, of course, diversity of religion, though Catholicism is the predominant religion in Mexico. But there are other people from other religions, and every single person, even the atheists, believe that on the Day of the Dead, the souls of the dearly departed are going to come. And in some parts of Mexico, mostly on the urbanized areas, the celebration is very secular, you know. It doesn't have that deeply rooted spiritual meaning. However, if you go to the small rural places in Mexico, the closer to the earth, to say it in one way, the closer to nature, mm-hmm. the more yep. of a spiritual value that the celebration has. And there is one place in Oaxaca, an island that is called Janitzio. And there in Janitzio, it is incredible. You know, the people actually, they go to the cemeteries the day before, they start washing the graveyards, they put flowers, they do the little flower trail from the cemetery to their home. They will have food, they will have a musical group, they will have liquor. I mean, it becomes a huge celebration because what we're celebrating is life. Right. Yes, we are remembering our dearly departed, but we are remembering how they blossomed, how they left us a seed, and how they come back, kind of like to check how we're doing. You know, they come to have a party with us, and then they will go back again to the world in which they are resting. So there is a lot of myths and beliefs that, you know, the food loses their sustenance because the spirits came and ate the nutritious value of the food. That, oh my God, my dog just walked into the room. He opened the door and he scared the crap out of me. Talking about spirits and the door opened by itself because this little doggy pushed it. Thank you, Uno. So, there is a lot of places where it's very spiritual. And actually, the people of Janitzio has opened up to the world, and they invite people to come and observe the celebration. But they ask that you please don't take photos, don't interrupt them, because they are communing with their dearly departed. You know, it's a ceremony, and mm-hmm. you know. But they open to the public because they know that people want to see it. But, you know, in Mexico City, you cannot do the trail of petals and flowers from a cemetery to your home because, A, it's not safe, and, B, the cemetery is probably 5 miles away from where you live in the city where there's cars and avenues and highways and et cetera. So you cannot do it like that. So mostly in the city, what people do is their ofrendas, their offerings at home. And it's decorated, you know, with the paper, cut paper flags, with the huge candles, with the bread that is called the bread of the dead, pan de muertos. And mm-hmm. is this round bread that has a little bit of a shape. It's a round shape, but it's supposed to be the bones and the head, the skull of the dead. And there's so much fun, you know, it's beautiful. By the way, if anybody ever gives you a skull, a sugar skull with your name, don't freak out, because that means they love you and they want to see you represented on a skull. And, you know, it is a token of love, and, you know, it's traditional, it's love, but it's not something that people should freak out about. And quintessentially, for me, it's like very emotionally heavy, romantic, if you will, that the sugar skulls and the skull keeps being the representation of Day of the Dead, because the origin is this two figures that are Mictlantecuhtli and Mictlantecihuatl, or Mictlantecuhtli and Tzontemoc. They have two names each, because of the part of the processes and how they were biologically in our body, blah, blah, blah. But the sugar skull connects us to 3,500 years ago with these figures were present at the celebration. And speaking of sugar skulls, do you know who La Catrina is?
The name sounds very familiar.
Have you seen that sugar skull painted lady that has a hat with feathers? Okay.
Yes.
Her name actually is the chickpea picking sugar skull. You know, La Calavera Garbancera. And it translates to the chickpeas picking skull. And a lot of people believe that she was painted by Frida Kahlo, or that she was painted by Diego Rivera. And that is a lie. That is a mistake. She is actually painting a sketch by the artist named Jose Guadalupe Posadas. And she's quite young. You know, when we're talking about the tradition being 3,500 years old, she's like 110, you know. She was painted between 1910 or 1913. They don't know exactly when she was painted. And so she's quite young. And she was painted just the neck and the skull, the face, and the hat. And she was an instrument of political satire. And there is, so not only we have the sugar skulls that we call calaveras, but we also have this satirical rhymes, these verses that they're supposed to be written on a funny way, but they began as a satirical, political, you know, ridiculizing the people of Mexico, because in that, in those years, Mexico was trying to act as if we were French, because we have a emperor for like a minute or two, Maximiliano, you know, the emperor from France. And and then he decided to paint this satire to make fun of the people who didn't have money to eat, but they want to dress, you know, on a French style. And the verses started as political satire. So you will talk about how so-and-so politician die of hunger, but, you know, is happy dancing on the underworld. And there's a whole lot more about tradition and the little sugar skulls and the flowers and the meanings and all that. But would you like to go and listen to some music?
Yeah, we're at the bottom of the hour. Let's listen to some music and we'll be back.
Cool. Let me find some music here to play. How about this sounds fitting. Louis Guru with Sacred Ashes, and we'll be back with more here on Lunatic Mondays.
Sacred ashes on our faces. You hear the heartbeat of the drums. Ancient chants we still remember. Sacred words dance on our tongues. Walk through the smoke down to the water. Past the burning. Come take my hand. Walk through the down to the water. And you'll finally understand. Walk through the smoke down to the water. Past the burning. Come take my hand. Walk through the smoke down to the water.
Hey, everybody. This is Jules Russell, and we're back on Lunatic Mondays. I'm talking to Laura Gonzalez tonight about Day of the Dead. And before we went to break there, we were talking about La Catrina. And Laura, what's the relationship between Frida Kahlo and her?
You know, actually, other than she was a great fan of the work of Jose Guadalupe Posadas, and I think she got very inspired for, you know, this iconography with the skulls and skeletons and Day of the Dead, of course, is ingrained on every Mexican's mind, and the aesthetics are beautiful and quintessentially Mexican. And I think Frida was very, very inspired by Posadas, but she did not paint La Catrina. What happened is Diego Rivera, her husband, reimagined La Catrina, and he painted her on a huge mural in Mexico City. And he is the one that painted her with a body. So he is the one that gave her this feather boa stole and having the actual face and tail of a snake, you know, an homage to Quetzalcoatl and our Aztec culture. And they are very close painted together on that mural. So you can see Jose Guadalupe Posadas and La Catrina, and right next to them you can see Frida Kahlo painted holding the hand of a young Diego Rivera, because he painted himself as a child. And then Frida, in a lot of her paintings, she uses skulls and skeletons, and they all remind us of La Catrina, of course, because they are very quintessential of the Mexican culture. But she didn't paint it. She just loved it. I think she liked Day of the Dead and skulls. She probably liked it a little bit less than I do, because, you know, I'm the craziest one person that I know about Day of the Dead. So I know Frida Kahlo. Yeah. I think Frida was very close second, in love with Day of the Dead, you know, like right behind me. And it's an homage to the culture, I think, but she did not paint La Catrina. And it's important that we give credit to Jose Guadalupe Posadas, because he is the one who created it. And speaking of you know, the skulls, it's so funny because kids now, and that is also a newish tradition, you know, like about 100 years old or so, especially in urban settings, kids go around asking for their calaverita, so their little skull. And it's very similar to trick-or-treating, though there is no trick part of it. The kids just knock on the door and they ask for candy. And even though that could be similar to Halloween, it is not Mexican Halloween. I know you heard me say this a million times, but it's quite important that we, especially us on a pagan setting, you know, people who believe on paganism, as much as Samhain is not Halloween, right, Day of the Dead is not the Mexican Halloween. What happened is the colonizers tried to do with Day of the Dead the same they did with Samhain, and they tried to eradicate the holiday, and they moved it to All Saints Day and All Souls Day, and in trying to eradicate the holiday, they make it bigger. kind of like the same that happened with Samhain. They tried to eradicate Samhain and they make it into All Hallows Eve, and we all know how that didn't work out either. So I think the Catholics should stop trying to eradicate pagan holidays because they just make them bigger. But it's not Mexican Halloween, you know?
Cool. Yep. So I'm sure many of the listeners have watched the movie Coco, and I know you've seen it because we've talked about it. Did you like Coco, and what do you think about the commercialization of the idea of Day of the Dead?
Girl. What do I think about Coco? I know a lot of people are going to fall off their chairs. I liked Coco. I think, first of all, no one ever is going to be able to take the deeply rooted significance and sacredness of Day of the Dead from us, the Mexicans. So people who cry foul play when they talk about Coco and, it's stealing us from our holiday, that's never going to happen because this is our beloved holiday and it's never going to be stolen from us. They're trying, though, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's never going to happen.
Taken with a grain of salt, actually, the people who created Coco, okay, first of all, it's Hollywood. Okay, is Disney, it's got to have certain qualities that make it into a fairy tale. So, yes, there is the component of the dog, and it is a xoloscuintly dog, a xolot, just like the dog, you know, Dante. And it's funny that the dog is called Dante, because the xolot on the Mexican metaphors is the one that takes you into the underworld. So if when we go to the underworld, we are guided by a dog and we know the underworld is not an underworld, but is going to sleep. So this dog takes us to go to sleep and then brings us back to wake up. And the name Dante, like descending into the inferno. I mean, these little Easter eggs, you know, they're cute. So the dog is legit. I loved, capital L, that there was no religious imagery throughout the whole movie. There's not one cross. There's not one saint. And believe me, I watched the movie with a magnifying glass. So I love that they did not Catholicize it. There is, however, a lot of mentions of pyramids and the ancient peoples of Mexico and the marigolds and all of that, that is very quintessentially tied up with the original origins of the holiday. But the part that makes the movie for me, if you all remember the movie, and if you haven't seen it, watch it. There is a part where they fall into this water pit and it's like a cave. It's like a cave and there's water. And by now I'm assuming everybody has watched Coco. This is when they realize that they're actually related, that they are actually great grandson and great grandfather. And they are on a womb-like space because there's water. It's a cave with water. And on the wall, there is an image of a statue, like an Aztec figure, and that is none other than Mictlantecuhtli. That is the quote-unquote goddess of death, and all this Day of the Dead thing is believed that it was celebrated in her honor. So to me, that makes the movie. To me, that makes it accurate because it is the right image. It is in the right spot. And it is at the right moment where it says, we all come from the goddess. We all come from this origin. So I think all in all, the movie is very cute. Alebrijes are part of the art in Mexico, and they are part of the aesthetics of our culture because our culture is filled with aesthetics that are beautiful. As far as I know, and I don't claim to know everything, though I've been researching for 34 years, as far as I know, the Alebrijes, the wonderful statues that are colorful and have wings and fangs and are a combination of different animals. I don't think they are related to Day of the Dead. However, there's something very funny that is happening. In Mexico, specifically in Mexico City, we are actually buying back this commercializing of the holiday. And so for the last 3 years, I think, or four maybe, there has been a parade that happens the weekend before Day of the Dead. And people are marching with faces or sugar skulls, dressed as Katrinas. And the last march that happened last weekend, and this is fresh information, they have Alebrijes at the march. So even if it wasn't related, now it is. And, you know, Jules, when people ask me, when are you going to write the book about Day of the Dead? I'm like, I can't. I cannot write a book of something that keeps evolving every year. Every year there's something new that gets added to the tradition. So it's like piling up. It's like the biggest onion in the world that just keeps growing layers and layers and layers. So you cannot, you can try to understand the holiday, and I can try, to the best of my knowledge, I can try to share that concept with all of y'all, but there is no way to finish because now the Alebrijes, at least in Mexico City, they're tied them up with the Day of the Dead. Maybe there is one state or one little town where they are part of the tradition and I just don't know it. Mm-hmm. But as far as I know, they were not related to Day of the Dead. Another thing that is very not related to Day of the Dead, and I cannot not do a show about it without mentioning this awful, ridiculously violent thing that I have seen American pagans saying is the goddess of death, is the dark goddess, etc. It's called Santa Muerte. And mm-hmm. Santa Muerte is an icon that was created in the 80s on a very violent neighborhood in Mexico City. It was created by criminals to protect criminals. And it is an apology to violence and crime. And as a priestess of the goddess, I have to tell people, a dark goddess will never be an apology of violence and crime, especially when this violence and crime is targeted towards women, just because they are women. So let's make sure that things that we do are congruent. And I have had Americans whom are not Mexican, whom are not people of color, coming to me and tell me, oh, but I read the book of Mr. Schwartz or Mr. Smith or whatever. And I have to reply with, I grew up 10 miles from the neighborhood where this icon was created. I know the bitch. We grew up together. I know who she is. She's not the Day of the Dead goddess. She's not Mictlantecuhtli. Pardon me for swearing. She is not related to Day of the Dead. She is not the dark goddess. And I'm not as arrogant to tell you all how to practice or what to practice. You do you, boo. But don't be telling people that she is a dark goddess or B, the goddess of Day of the Dead, because she is not. That's an icon of violence and crime. And unfortunately, I cannot ever do a talk of Day of the Dead without mentioning that thing because people will be very confused, even people in Mexico, you know, because people in general don't question stuff. They just believe because they're sheep, you know.
Right.
But anyway.
And that's one of the reasons I keep saying that if you're going to honor a god or goddess, you need to do your research into who they really are. Because of things like that, you'll find that, you know, sometimes there are very violent backgrounds to these, and it's not about reclaiming the god or goddess. It's about knowing who they are and maybe not dealing with them.
Yep. And you know, this cult was born in Mexico City, on one of the most violent places of the city. And then it was appropriated by the cartels in the north side of Mexico. So all this feminicides that are happening on the border, fill the blank, you know. But anyway.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So when they say the Aztecs sacrifice people, I will say no. The Aztecs did not sacrifice people. The actual sacrifice is happening now. And you are not going to find that on a book. You are not going to find that on a book for obvious reasons.
Right.
You know. But going back to not yet more pleasant things, you asked me about commercializing. And again, we see now sugar skulls everywhere, Target, Walmart, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to keep promoting these names of the places. And everybody's wearing something that has a sugar skull on it. And it hurts. And at the same time, it's cool because, you know, it's like, oh, look, my culture is represented everywhere. And as you said earlier, you've been to my house. So, you know, I buy anything and everything that will have sugar skull. All my closet is filled with sugar skull stuff. And it is paradoxical because as a Mexican, I want to buy it, but I would love to buy it from a Mexican artisan. It's like when the doll made by this huge conglomerate of dolls that makes also the Barbie doll and all that, they came out with this sugar skull Barbie, and I'm like, you can buy anything, Day of the Dead, memorabilia, done by a Mexican artisan. Shake a tree, you will find a Mexican artisan, believe me. We're everywhere. So buy stuff, buy Mexicans from Mexicans. Because the appropriation of things is utilizing the culture for your own gain. And a lot of the times it's for monetary gain. And without recognizing the context or the struggle. And it is really disgusting to me to see all these Americans loving the culture and slapping on themselves everything Day of the Dead, from socks to underwear to bandanas to et cetera, and being okay with our people, our children, being kept in cages.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah, they don't see the disconnect.
Yeah, you cannot dissociate that much. Come on, people. You know, especially our pagan people. You know, but
exactly.
Going back into nicer things, being recognized and being appreciated is something that is wonderful. And I will always say that the cure to appropriation is through appreciation, through education. And if you're listening to this show, you're getting yourself educated, you know?
Absolutely.
And I want to comment with you that it's a tradition that, and if you don't believe me, Google this stuff. Vanilla, chocolate, tomatoes, from Mexico to the world. The words, tamal, tortilla, taco, from the Nahuatl language of our native people. Did you know you speak Nahuatl? You do every time you say taco, tortilla, tostada, tomate, chocolate.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Yeah?
Those are Nahuatl. Every time I talk to you, I learn something new.
Those are Nahuatl words, and those are Mexican fruits and vegetables that they came from Mexico and they were taken to Europe. And people think like, oh no, chocolate comes from Sweden. No, honey, it comes from Mexico. The colonizers take it back to Europe, and it took, because, you know, it's the same parallel, the same meridian, but it's not from Sweden, it's from Mexico. But like everything else, from Mexico to the world, and I have to read this because otherwise I butchered it. In 2008, the traditional Day of the Dead was inscribed into the representative list of the intangible cultural heritage of humanity by the United Nations. So this is heritage for the world, and we love it that you love it. Honor it. Don't commercialize it, please. Don't cheapen it out. And please, as Halloween approaches the next couple of days, our culture is not a Halloween custom. You want to wear your Day of the Dead leggings or t-shirts or hats, wear them any other day. But on Halloween,
not
if you
Halloween.
Wear anything, Day of the Dead, and if you're not Mexican or Mexican-American and you're wearing a sugar skull for Halloween, then what is your outfit? Are you dressed as my culture? That ain't cool.
Yep. Not cool at all.
No, not at all. There's so many other things to be, you know?
Absolutely.
Be a kind of soup.
Right? There's just crazy costumes out there this year. I saw a Bob Ross costume, and I'm like, okay, be a painter.
Yep. Yeah.
So we're coming up at the top of the hour here.
Yes, yes, dear. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So now that we've talked about Day of the Dead, we had this awesome talk and everybody got educated, and I urge everybody to do more research and look things up and know what you're doing and know what you're talking about. What's coming up in the next couple of weeks that we can listen in on and learn more stuff?
Oh, a lot of stuff. So if you all speak Spanish, you can listen to Paganos del Mundo. Cristian Ortiz on November 2nd is going to have something about El Velo, and he's actually going to talk about all of it, Samhain, Day of the Dead, and Halloween. He's going to be talking about all three traditions. On November 9th, Carolina Amor from Argentina is going to be talking to us about the Triple Goddess. That is also going to be in Spanish. On November 16th, Harwetuleva from Spain is going to talk about the myth of the Baba Yaga. And this is also in Spanish. And on November 23rd, Patrícia Finkler from Brazil is going to have an interview with, and I need to make sure I say this correctly because it's on Portuguese, Rescatando Nuestra Tierra. I will not butcher it, and I will not try to say it in Portuguese, but I say it in Spanish. So those are the Paganos del Mundo shows. Yours truly on Lunes Lunáticos, I will have Gaby Martinez talking about holistic healing and the flower tinctures, Flores de Bach is called the system. And in English, Lunatic Mondays in English, November 11th, I will have an interview with Oberon Sell, the Wizard of Oz. And on November 25th, I will have an interview with the amazing Christopher Hughes, who is an author, and he's also the, and I'm reading this, so again, I don't butcher, Chief of the Anglesey Druid Order, and we're going to talk about our common passions, which are the death, dying, bereavement, and of course, tarot. So don't miss those shows. They're going to be pretty cool shows. And of course, as always on CSM Podcast, we will have Selena Fox with Divine in Dreams and her Nature Mystic Anchor presentations. We will have a special Halloween moon magic ritual with David and Janet Ewan. And Deborah Rose will have her interviews also for Circle Talk. So a lot of good stuff happening here on CSM Podcast. Thank you so much, Jules, for helping me and for hosting me and for hosting Lunatic Mondays tonight. And I leave you the microphones to say good night tonight.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me on here. This has been great. And to everybody out there, be blessed and have a great week.
You are loved. Bye-bye.
And and thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.